Welcome to the deep dive. Look, you're here because you want to get straight to the important stuff, right? Maybe prepping for something, catching up on a field, or maybe you're just curious.
Exactly.
Today, we're really honing in on something huge for health. High blood pressure. Hypertension, they call it. Affects millions.
And it often flies completely under the radar.
Precisely. So our mission here is to pull out the absolute core insights on managing it based on the sources we've looked at. We want to give you a clear picture without drowning you in detail.
Yeah, we've gone through quite a bit, general info on management, what hypertension actually is, its causes, diagnosis, strategies, and importantly, the role and limits of dietary supplements.
Things like magnesium, potassium, omega-3s.
CoQ10, garlic, vitamin D, yeah, all of those.
And that silent killer aspect is key, isn't it? Most people feel perfectly fine, even when their pressure's high. That's why getting a handle on it proactively is so vital.
Absolutely. So maybe let's start with the basics. What exactly is high blood pressure?
Good question. Lay it out for us.
Okay, so picture your arteries, right? They're like hoses carrying blood from your heart. High blood pressure, or hypertension, means the force of that blood pushing against the artery walls is just consistently too high.
Okay, too much force.
Right. And over time, that constant high pressure, well, it damages the arteries and forces your heart to work way harder than it's supposed to.
Then how do we measure that? The numbers?
We use two numbers. The top one, systolic, that's the pressure when your heart beats, pushing blood out. The bottom number, diastolic, is the pressure when your heart rests between beats.
Systolic over diastolic.
Exactly. And the threshold we're generally looking at for hypertension, it's consistently above 130 for the top number or 80 for the bottom number. So 130 over 80.
Consistently above that mark.
Yeah, consistency is key. A single high reading isn't necessarily hypertension, but if it stays up there, it signals that strain on the system.
Okay, 130/80, that's the number to watch. And do people get high blood pressure for different reasons?
Well, yes, the sources talk about two main types. There's primary hypertension, which is the most common kind. It sort of creeps up slowly over years, usually a mix of your genetics and lifestyle habits.
Right, the gradual onset one.
And then there's secondary hypertension. That's different. It's caused by another medical condition like kidney disease, thyroid problems, even some medications.
So something else is triggering it.
Exactly. But either way, primary or secondary, that sustained high pressure isn't good. It can damage organs like your kidneys, your brain, your eyes.
And you often wouldn't feel a thing. Back to that silent killer idea.
That's the crucial and frankly scary part. No obvious warning signs most of the time. You can't just feel if your blood pressure is creeping up.
Which makes regular checks absolutely essential.
Couldn't agree more. So knowing that, what are the main things driving those numbers up? What factors are behind hypertension?
Well, from everything we've looked at, it really seems to be a mix. Genetics definitely plays a part. If it runs in your family, you might be more prone to it.
Sure, family history matters.
But honestly, the sources put a huge emphasis on lifestyle, especially diet. That comes up again and again.
Oh, absolutely. Diet is massive.
Huh?
And the biggest player there, sodium. Salt.
Right. How does that work exactly?
Well, when you take in too much sodium, your body holds on to extra water to try and dilute it. More water means more fluid volume in your blood vessels.
Which means higher pressure, like turning up the water pressure in those hoses.
Exactly. But there's a flip side, potassium. Potassium actually helps your body get rid of sodium and helps relax your blood vessel walls.
Ah, so potassium is like the counterbalance.
You've got it. That's why diets rich in fruits, vegetables, beans, all good potassium sources are so beneficial. They help manage that sodium impact.
So less salty stuff, more potassium-rich foods. Makes sense. What about moving our bodies, activity levels, and weight?
Big factors. Being inactive means your heart and blood vessels aren't working as efficiently. And carrying extra weight, well, that just means your heart has to pump harder to get blood everywhere it needs to go. More work equals more pressure.
Okay. And it wasn't just food and exercise, was it? Alcohol came up, smoking too.
Yep. Drinking too much alcohol can definitely raise blood pressure, both right after you drink and over the long term.
And smoking.
Smoking is particularly nasty for blood vessels. The chemicals damage the lining, make them stiff, less elastic. That narrows the space for blood to flow and rams up the pressure.
Okay, so damage and stiffness from smoking. What about stress and sleep? Modern life stressors.
They play a role too. Chronic stress keeps your body in a sort of alert mode, which can elevate blood pressure. And not getting enough quality sleep consistently, that disrupts your body's natural rhythms for regulating pressure.
Wow. So it really is a complex picture. genes, what we eat, how much we move, weight, booze, smoking, stress, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It all weaves together.
It really does.
Okay, so if it's usually silent, how do we even find out if we have it? Besides going for a check, I mean, are there any symptoms?
That's the million-dollar question, and the answer is usually no. Not reliable ones, anyway. That silent killer name is unfortunately very accurate.
No warning bells, typically.
Right. Now, in very rare cases, if someone's blood pressure is dangerously high, like crisis levels, they might get headaches, shortness of breath, maybe nosebleeds, but you absolutely cannot count on those. They usually only happen when things are already quite severe.
So waiting to feel bad is not the strategy?
Definitely not. The only reliable way to know is to get it checked regularly.
Who should be getting checked and how often?
The general advice is regular screenings are important for all adults,
mm-hmm.
but especially crucial if you're over 40 or if you have any of those risk factors we talked about, like obesity, not being very active, or having a family history of hypertension or heart disease.
And how do they actually check it?
It's pretty straightforward. A doctor or nurse uses that inflatable cuff on your arm. It's called a sphygmomanometer.
Right, the cuff.
They inflate it, then listen as they release the air to measure those systolic and diastolic pressures we mentioned. And if your readings are consistently over that 30 and 80 mark on multiple occasions.
That usually leads to a hypertension diagnosis.
Correct. Though sometimes they might do more tests.
Like what?
Maybe blood tests, urine tests, possibly an ECG that checks your heart's electrical activity.
Hmm.
This is to see if there's an underlying cause, like that secondary hypertension, and just to assess your overall heart health.
Okay. So screening is vital for detection. Now, say someone is diagnosed. What's next? What are the main ways to manage it? Let's hold off on supplements for a moment. What are the foundational strategies?
Lifestyle changes are almost always the first line of defense, and they are incredibly important. Top of the list is usually regular physical activity.
How much are we talking?
The standard recommendation is aiming for at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic activity per week.
So like 30 minutes, 5 days a week?
Yeah, something like that. Brisk walking, cycling, swimming, things that get your heart rate up a bit, it really helps.
Okay, exercise first. What about circling back to diet?
Diet is absolutely fundamental. It's about shifting towards foods low in saturated fat, cholesterol, and especially sodium, and loading up on fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lean protein.
You mentioned the DASH diet earlier.
Yes, the DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, is a perfect example. It's well studied and specifically designed for this. It really emphasizes nutrients known to help blood pressure, like potassium, calcium, and magnesium, while limiting the stuff that hinders.
Got it. So it's a structured plan focused on beneficial foods. What else fits under that lifestyle umbrella?
Stress management is another key piece. Finding ways to cope with stress, maybe through yoga, meditation, mindfulness, even just hobbies you enjoy that can have a real impact on blood pressure over time.
Managing the mental side of things.
Definitely. And of course, cutting back on alcohol if you drink excessively and quitting smoking altogether. Those are critical lifestyle steps.
Right. Avoid tobacco, limit alcohol. So those are the big lifestyle pillars. What if someone makes all those changes, but their blood pressure is still high?
That does happen. Sometimes lifestyle changes alone aren't enough to reach the target blood pressure goals. And that's when medication becomes really important.
Okay, so meds come into play then.
Yes. There are many different types of blood pressure medications. And a doctor will figure out the best one or combination based on the individual's health, age, other conditions, etc.
And it's not just take a pill and forget it, I assume.
Not at all. Even with medication, regular monitoring of blood pressure is still crucial to make sure the treatment is working effectively and to adjust the dose or type of medication if needed. It's an ongoing process.
Lifestyle first, medication if needed, and always keep monitoring. That makes sense. Okay, now let's bring in the supplements. Where do they fit in this picture? Sounds like they're not the main solution.
That's exactly right. Think of them as potential helpers or adjuncts, not replacements. They should support healthy habits, and any prescribed medications not take their place.
So they could offer some benefits.
They might. Some supplements provide nutrients that are important for cardiovascular health generally, which could indirectly support blood pressure management.
And the ones we mentioned, magnesium, potassium, omega-3s, what's the thinking behind them?
Well, take magnesium. It's involved in helping blood vessels relax. So theoretically, getting enough might help lower pressure slightly. Potassium, as we said, helps balance sodium. Omega-3s have anti-inflammatory effects, which are good for blood vessels overall.
So plausible mechanisms.
Plausible mechanisms, yes. But and this is a big, but the sources are very clear. Supplements are not a magic bullet. They absolutely cannot substitute for those fundamental lifestyle changes. Diet, exercise, weight management, those are still the cornerstones.
And probably best not to just start popping pills, right?
Definitely not. It is essential to talk to your doctor or healthcare provider before starting any supplement. Needs vary hugely from person to person, and there's always the potential for interactions with other meds or health issues.
Okay, crucial advice. Let's delve a bit deeper into some of these specific supplements. Magnesium first, what more can you tell us?
Right, magnesium. It's a mineral involved in hundreds of body processes, including muscle and nerve function, and importantly here, blood vessel relaxation. Some research does suggest that adequate magnesium intake is linked to healthier blood pressure levels.
Especially if someone's low in it.
Potentially, yes. The benefit might be more noticeable in people who already have hypertension or whose dietary intake of magnesium is low to begin with.
And where do we get it normally? Food first.
Absolutely. Leafy greens like spinach, nuts, seeds, whole grains, those are great natural sources. A good diet should provide a decent amount. Supplementation might be considered if intake is insufficient, but again.
Talk to your doctor, got it. What about potassium? We know it balances sodium, but taking it as a supplement.
Yeah, so beyond getting it from foods like bananas, avocados, sweet potatoes, lentils, supplementation is an option, particularly if someone finds it hard to get enough through diet. It helps the kidneys excrete excess sodium.
But you mentioned a caution earlier.
A big one. Potassium supplements need real caution, especially for anyone with kidney problems. Too much potassium can lead to a dangerous condition called hyperkalemia. So medical guidance isn't just recommended, it's really non-negotiable here.
Okay, strong warning on potassium supplements. Omega-3s, next fish oil, and the like. What's the connection to blood pressure?
Omega-3s are famous for their anti-inflammatory properties. That inflammation can affect blood vessel health. Research suggests omega-3 supplements, often from fish oil or algal oil for vegetarians, might lead to a modest reduction in blood pressure.
Modest reduction?
Yes. Usually not dramatic, but potentially helpful. Plus, they have broader benefits for heart health things, like reducing triglycerides. So it's often seen as beneficial for overall cardiovascular wellness, not just pressure.
Okay. Potential small benefit for pressure, bigger picture heart health good. Now, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10 sounds a bit more complex.
It is. CoQ10 is an antioxidant that our bodies make, and it's vital for energy production within cells. Some studies suggest it might help lower blood pressure, possibly by improving endothelial function, that's the health of the inner lining of blood vessels, which helps with blood flow.
So, helps the pipes work better?
Kind of, yeah. Some research has shown small decreases in both systolic and diastolic pressure with CoQ10. Typical doses in studies are often around 100-200 milligrams a day.
Any other benefits?
It's generally thought to be good for heart health, and it might be particularly relevant for people taking statin drugs for cholesterol, because statins can sometimes deplete the body's CoQ10 levels.
Interesting link. Any downsides?
Side effects are usually mild, maybe some stomach upset, but it can interact with blood thinners like warfarin, so that's a critical point for discussion with a doctor. Like others, the research shows potential, but results vary. More studies ongoing.
Okay. CoQ10. Potential helper, especially maybe with statins, but check for interactions. What about garlic? Old folk remedy, right?
It has a long history. Garlic contains a compound called allicin, which gets released when garlic is crushed or chopped. Allicin is thought to be the main player behind its potential cardiovascular benefits.
And how might allicin help blood pressure?
It seems to help relax blood vessels, promoting vasodilation, which means widening of the vessels, easier flow, less pressure. Garlic also has antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. Some studies suggest regular intake, often via supplements, can lead to modest blood pressure reductions.
Just eating more garlic bread probably won't cut it.
Uh-huh. Probably not enough allicin from that alone. Supplements come in capsules, tablets, extracts. Aged garlic extract is one form often studied. Dosages can vary, maybe 600, 1200 milligrams of extract daily in studies. But again, personalized advice is needed.
Any side effects besides garlic breath?
Yeah, that's one. Also, potentially some digestive upset. And like CoQ10, garlic can interact with blood thinners, so caution is needed there too. Studies show promise, but results aren't always consistent.
Okay, garlic interesting, but needs careful consideration and a doctor chat. Last one. Vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, connection to blood pressure.
This is an area of ongoing research. There seems to be an association. People with low vitamin D levels often have higher rates of hypertension. The exact how isn't fully clear, but vitamin D is involved in regulating the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system.
That sounds important.
It's a key hormone system that controls blood pressure. Vitamin D might also influence calcium handling and inflammation, both relevant to blood pressure.
So getting enough vitamin D could be helpful, from sun, food, supplements.
That's the idea. Sunshine helps our bodies make it, but that varies hugely. Fatty fish, fortified milk, and cereals are food sources. Supplements, usually vitamin D3, are common. Recommended intake is typically 600-800 IU daily, but needs vary.
Can you get too much?
Yes. Vitamin D toxicity is a real thing, though usually from very high supplement doses. It can cause high calcium levels. So monitoring, especially if supplementing, is wise.
And does taking vitamin D actually lower blood pressure in studies?
The results are mixed. Some studies show modest reductions, particularly in people who were deficient to begin with, or maybe in people with diabetes, but other large studies haven't found a significant effect across the board. So it's not a guaranteed fix.
Okay, vitamin D, important for health, may be linked to blood pressure, but supplementation benefits for pressure specifically are still a bit uncertain. This really hammers home the point about limitations, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and that leads us right into the crucial limitations of relying on supplements for blood pressure. It cannot be stressed enough. They are not standalone solutions.
Not a magic pill.
Not even close. Relying on them might even lead to complacency about the really essential stuff.
Yeah.
The diet, the exercise, quitting smoking. You can't supplement your way out of an unhealthy lifestyle.
And the quality issue you mentioned earlier.
That's a big one, too.
Yeah.
The supplement industry isn't regulated like pharmaceuticals. Quality, purity, potency, it can vary wildly. You don't always know what you're actually getting. Choosing reputable brands, maybe those with third-party testing, helps, but it's still a factor.
Plus, interactions and side effects.
Exactly. We talked about potential issues with potassium blood thinners. Taking too much of certain things can be actively harmful, and effectiveness just isn't universal. What helps one person might do nothing for another, due to genetics, overall health, you name it.
So they're just one small part of a much bigger picture.
Precisely. A potential part of a comprehensive strategy, but never a substitute for medical advice, prescribed treatments, or those foundational healthy habits.
Which brings us back full circle to the absolute necessity of talking to a healthcare provider.
Yes. That conversation is non-negotiable, really.
Why is that consultation so critical before starting any supplement for blood pressure?
Because your health is unique. A doctor understands your personal medical history, knows what other medications you're taking, can assess your actual dietary intake and risk factors. They can give advice tailored specifically to you. Generic advice just isn't enough here.
Especially if you're already being treated for high blood pressure or have other conditions.
Absolutely critical then. As we've seen, some supplements can interfere with blood pressure meds, making them less effective or causing side effects, potassium and certain diuretics, for instance, or interactions with blood thinners. Someone with kidney disease needs very different advice than someone without. Only a healthcare provider can navigate that safely.
And they can help choose wisely if a supplement is deemed appropriate.
Yes, they can often recommend reputable brands or specific formulations and dosages that are more likely to be safe and potentially effective for your situation. Plus, they'll integrate it into your overall plan and schedule follow-ups to monitor how things are going.
So it's about partnership, informed decisions together.
That's the ideal. A collaborative approach is always the safest and most effective path when considering supplements as part of managing blood pressure.
Okay, this has been incredibly thorough. Let's try to boil it down. What's the single biggest takeaway from this deep dive on managing high blood pressure?
I think the core message is that it's a multi-pronged effort. It starts with understanding your risk, then actively embracing those healthy lifestyle choices. Diet, exercise, stress management, regular monitoring is key. And then, maybe, supplements can play a supporting role, but only with careful consideration and professional guidance.
And acting early makes a difference.
Huge difference. Catching and managing high blood pressure early can prevent serious complications down the road, like heart attack, stroke, kidney failure. It's about long-term investment in your health.
Not a quick fix, but a sustained, informed approach.
Exactly. It's about taking control through knowledge and consistent action.
Well, that clarifies things immensely. Thanks for breaking all that down.
We're happy to do it. It's important stuff.
It really is. And for you, listening in as you process all this, think about what resonates most. Is it the power of those daily lifestyle choices, the non-negotiable need for regular checks, or maybe the nuanced potential role of supplements as just one tool in the box? And here's a final thought. Given that supplements aren't the magic bullet, What one foundational lifestyle change, maybe diet, maybe activity, maybe stress reduction, could you realistically prioritize starting now that might have the biggest impact on your health journey? Something to ponder until our next deep dive.